Welcome to Relationship Marketing 101. Directions University at directionsu.com delivers passion-powered results for your life and business so that you can live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Linda Feinholz, the Dean and founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. And I'm calling in this week from Los Angeles for our live show, Tuesdays at noon Eastern, on Blog Talk Radio. My co-host Gina Gaudio-Graves is currently speaking on the big stage right now to 150 women entrepreneurs, and she'll be back with us next week. So we have a great show for you today. On our show are three amazing, successful entrepreneurs. Each of them had hugely successful business lives in the offline business world, and in fact continue to this day. And each of them now has developed powerhouse online businesses. All three of them, very different businesses offline and very different businesses online. And each of them has used relationship marketing in both of those worlds, and that's what we're here to discuss today. This week, I've got Dawn Osborne, who's the owner of Inquarta.com. You'll see the links to everyone's sites on the show notes. Through his website, Don helps students and parents make the difficult transition from college to graduate school, and he specializes in medical school, dental school, law, and MBA school admissions. So welcome, Don.
Thank you, Linda.
Our second panelist today is Mary Wilhite. She's known as the mobile marketing queen. She's a consummate local marketer and head of a company that actually trains local marketers how to better serve their customers, particularly in the new arena of mobile marketing. And she can be found at marywilhitemarketing.com. Welcome, Mary.
Hello.
And third on our panel today is Greg Ryder. Greg wears multiple hats. He's the consummate multipreneur. He's a venture capitalist in the offline world, and he's on the online world, he's followed his passion to figure out how to use the online world to really transform our children's lives through multiple businesses such as ClubTuki.com. And we're going to hear more about all of that. So, Greg, welcome today.
Right on, right on. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. You know, in thinking about our show today, one of the things that I often share with my students and clients is the fact is a story from when I grew up overseas in Geneva, Switzerland, which is where I learned to ski. When I was learning, the ski instructors would ski down the slopes with us, and they wouldn't shout at us per se, but what they would do is they'd keep saying to us, flex your knees, flex your knees. And if we were trying to ski with our knees locked, they would swat us on the back of our knees and get us to, you know, unlock our knees and get our knees flexible. And years ago, my focus in business with my clients was strategic planning, where we were looking at 10-year plans. And I rapidly realized that there's no such thing anymore because technology is transforming our world. And I watched it happen both in the technology we use for operations in business and the technologies we use for being in relationship with others. And so much of what I do with my clients is teaching them the importance of having those flexible knees. And I know that's going to play a role in our conversation today as we talk about, so what did relationship marketing look like in the offline world? What does it look like now? And what's still changing so rapidly now in the online world? So, Greg, why don't we start with you? I would love if you would share with our listeners a little bit about what being a venture capitalist means and how relationship marketing plays in that arena.
Okay. Well, you know what? Let me change the language just a little bit. So, you know, because the reason I say that is because when I use the term venture capitalist, a lot of times what slips out of my mouth is vulture capitalist.
We'll allow both terms if you want them on.
Yeah. So I was born into a real wealthy family, and my parents got divorced when I was real young. And to make a long story short, my dad started getting me investing and teaching me investing at the age of 19. I really lived the rich dad, poor dad story. And I started making investments, and then I became an investment banker, and I bought the firm I worked for. And I really was attracted to and gravitated towards raising capital and helping entrepreneurs, early stage, seed capital, startup companies. And so my company in that regard is called Angel Network. And the whole idea was, you know, you got these entrepreneurs with these great dreams, they needed capital. And a couple of my great stories is I raised some of the original seed capital to start Home Shopping Network. Or the smart carts at the airports where you get your luggage. I raised them the original seed capital. So that's kind of what it's all about. And for me, you take in, I actually had this idea of using social media and just social marketing and the whole online in 1997. And I put Angel Network online in 1997, but it was way ahead of its time. But now with Facebook and Twitter and primarily crowdfunding, we're finally at a point to where it's really working, and we're going to put a lot of energy and a lot of effort into funding entrepreneurs and collecting investors to work together as a syndicate to, you know, create jobs, stimulate the economy, and make this whole world go around.
I love it. And it's so cool to know somebody's literally been the designer and inception of what we now think of as very common nowadays.
Right. No, and I got to share this term with you. I was at the Global Financial Summit in the Bahamas, and we were talking about trickle-down economics, and somebody used the term torrential downpour economics. And I'm writing a new book, and it's so true. It's like, just think of, we raised, it wasn't just me, but there was other people. We raised $600,000 for Home Shopping Network. I think it was 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about the success of that company and the torrential downpour of jobs that had been created from that original seed capital that was raised, in 1982.
Right.
And you go, that's what it's all about, right? That's what stimulates the economy. That's what America's great, free enterprise capitalism. That's what it's just all about.
Right. So if you come up to the 64,000-foot level and look down at this notion of what Angel Network is about and raising money and finding early-stage businesses, where are the key relationship points in that arena?
Well, really, it's about the management team, it's about the legal team, it's about the accounting team, and it's about your coaches and mentors. Because everyone thinks, well, I just need money. But it's way more than money, right? It's marketing, it's relationships, it's board of directors, it's distribution. It's just way more than that. And it's just not that simple, not that easy. So there's this whole process. And those relationships in all of those key areas are the ones that are going to get you funded, and they're going to get you to success, and they're going to get you to, accomplish your dreams and your visions.
And those introductions to each of those advisors comes about through, well, it's a combination of you've got to be able to put a good business plan together that you're going to put in front of them, but it's also the human relationship side of being known and being trusted and therefore having the introductions made and so on.
Absolutely. No, that's obviously key, and obviously the Internet plays a huge, huge role in that. And one of the things I love about the Internet and where it's kind of evolved, especially with Facebook, it started off with eBay, with the whole rating system on eBay. It's like back in the days of eBay, you're going, man, I don't know if I want to buy anything on eBay because what if they don't send it to me? But that whole rating system they have just solved that issue of getting the scamsters out of it. And, that's what Facebook and social media does. It allows, it really puts, you can't really be out there and scamming people very long before, social media takes over and you're done.
Yeah, that's so true, and I appreciate your being able to create this link nowadays between what's happening in the offline world and the online world. I'd love to bring Don into the conversation because, Don, you had a long, storied career in the offline world. That was very much about relationships.
It was, and by building first a relationship with a marketing partner and then expanding those relationships both with university faculty, university administrators, as well as with the students themselves, I was able to leverage those relationships and really provide support in an area where students were suffering.
It's important, I think, for our listeners to understand what your background was and the thousands of students that you worked with. Could you share a little bit more of your background as well?
I'd be happy to. I started teaching for a company called the Princeton Review. I began teaching standardized testing with them. And as I was working with the pre-med students for their standardized tests, I noticed that although students were doing really well on the test, they still weren't getting into medical school. So that started me wondering what was going wrong, because I believed that, at the time, I believed that students with the better scores and better grades should get into better medical schools, and that just isn't true. So by looking into it, I realized that there were a number of sort of unspoken gaps in terms of how a strategy is laid out for students regarding medical school admissions, and that became the genesis of what I do for my clients.
So in that offline world, and as you were thinking from this new business perspective about how to solve this, what were the key relationships for you that needed to be built so that you could shape this new business?
You know, I'm reading a book right now called Tribal Leadership by Dave Logan.
Mm-hmm.
And in Tribal Leadership, Dave speaks about tribal leaders. And I think the artful answer to your question is to seek out and find what I call stage four, what Dave calls stage four tribal leaders, and align with them in order to serve their tribes best. So in my case, I had the support of a number of college students who understood what I was trying to accomplish, understood my mission, had a similar mission, and we were able to form a working partnership on campus.
And I love hearing that, because one of the things that's so critical, I know we each run into when we're working with our various clients, is people can have an extremely myopic view of what the key relationship is they're supposed to have. But I don't think people would have initially imagined that in order to transform what's going on in the grad school admissions arena, that your key relationships would actually start with the students, not with some institution leader.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. It was very confirming for me to recognize that, you know, just like in many other organizations where the customer is not always right, but at least the driving force for innovation, it's also true in university settings. When a college student wants something and is vocal about it, university administration is very likely to listen.
Cool. And let's bring our third guest in today, Mary Wilhite. You know, when people hear the moniker, the mobile marketing queen, instantly they think, oh, okay, you know all things technology. And indeed, when we talk about mobile marketing, it's barely 2 to 3 years old in the form that we think of it now. And you have had a long, rich career before mobile marketing was part of it. I'd love it if you would share, again, starting with the offline world, what was your focus in business?
Well, my focus of business, and again, thank you, Linda, for having me. My focus of business was really helping small businesses with their SEO. And what I did was, when I first got into internet marketing, because I started in internet marketing before mobile marketing, I went to several businesses and was telling them about internet marketing and being on a top of the search engine and Google and so forth and so on, and getting their name up. When people typed in, their businesses would come up. And that's pretty much how I started. What happened was I connected with a guy named Dan Hollings, and Dan was the he actually helped write The Secret, or was part of The Secret. Anyway, he taught me everything I needed to know about mobile marketing. And I went to 150 businesses, probably a lot more, but I got over 100 of those businesses signed up with mobile marketing techniques inside of 30 days. So people didn't know a lot about it, but what I was explaining to them about how the Yellow Pages, people weren't looking through the Yellow Pages anymore, the old traditional ways of marketing were pretty much dead, and they needed to come up with new ways of marketing and advertising your business, they were very, very excited about it. So that was pretty much my introduction to mobile marketing.
And one of the things that's important for our listeners to understand is we're talking in three different arenas. You were going in what we would call door-to-door, business-to-business, introducing yourself, describing the challenge they were facing and a solution you had. Very different version of relationship marketing than being in this sort of cocooned environment of the scholastic environment that Don was operating in, and a radically different environment, you know, again, than Greg, you were operating in, with people saying, please, 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 I'm coming to you because I'd like you to help me, you know, help fund me and get me going.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is, Linda, you know, businesses, you know, at that time, they were going through a sort of a down economic time, and they needed something. They needed hope. They needed to know that through the door. And I didn't figure it out, but I showed them a way to use SMS text message marketing. At that time, it was only SMS text message marketing. We have evolved now to push notifications using mobile apps. But I showed them how text message marketing could really drive customers, building a list first, using the existing customers that they already had, and sending them coupons, sending them deals, specials, to be able to get people in their door, customers in their door on a slow night, like a Tuesday or Wednesday night. If a pizzeria was slow, they can send out half out off on pizza and get the place flooded, or ladies' night for a bar, you know, sending out free drinks or free specials, or ladies get in free tonight. So it's a lot of ways that we use the mobile marketing, SMS, text message marketing to get customers in the door to drive their business's bottom line up. And you can do it in just about any business. So any business can really use mobile marketing. And now the focus, you hear it all over the place, is mobile apps. And that's becoming the next best thing, is using the application, creating an app or getting an app built, and using an app to actually market your business.
It's really intriguing to think about what technology is enabling right now, because as you were describing that, the vision that was coming to me was literally of the two tiers of relationships. You have relationships with your customers, the members of your programs who are learning how to become consummate online marketers from you, and in turn you're teaching them how to turn around and develop relationships with their clients. So whether you're working with that pizzeria owner or manager and you're teaching them how to enrich and broaden and deepen their relationships with their customers, and I just got this visual image of sort of the, what do you call it, the tree diagram of all the layers of relationships that are underway there.
Yeah, and you know what? One of the things is what you're explaining now is learning how to connect the dots. And if I had to say anything to your listeners, that would be the if I had to pick out one little nugget, and if I had to give that nugget from my heart, that nugget would be learning how to connect the dots. And when I say connect the dots, educating yourself about how marketing is right now, what we're doing today, how to use mobile marketing, and how it can help customers. And it, like you said, in my case, I am teaching my students constantly tips, tricks, strategies on how to build their business and how to succeed. And I think that that is the most important thing to really take it forth in this field of mobile marketing.
Yeah, that's great. And you just touched on something I want to expand on with all of us, which is really what are the common elements that we need to teach so that people understand they're the fundamentals that don't change in building relationships, and what's changing now. So, you know, Dawn, in the work that you're doing now within Quarta, a fundamental part of what you've done is, I've heard in your teaching in the past, is teaching your clients how to write compelling stories about themselves for their applications. It's all about building a relationship with an unknown person on the other end. You don't know who's going to be reading it.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, this unknown person has the role of judge, jury, executioner, at least from the point of view of the student.
Mm-hmm.
So writing to that audience is both high value and high risk. So a natural question for a young applicant to ask is, what does my, you know, my judge, what does my the committee member, what do they want to hear? Because, you know, I'm happy to give them whatever they're asking for. I just want to know what they want to hear. Which, as you can hear, underlying that is this implied belief that who I am and the story that I have to tell from my own authentic reality, from my own expression, my own experience, isn't good enough for admissions, and so therefore I need to reach outside of myself in order to figure out the right answer. So part of my role is to help my audience recognize that who they are and the message that they have to say is in fact good enough, and in fact it's the best message possible.
Wow. As you were sharing that, I'm thinking back to how many networking meetings I've stood in and watched people who are new to networking or even some long, you know, old-timers. You kind of watch them feeling uncomfortable in their skin as they're trying to construct a perfect answer in that networking setting of, you know, what am I supposed to say as I introduce myself or share who I am or what I do? And the power of letting that go and come back to who am I actually, who am I really, and how do I share that? And in the context of an application, you know, are there a couple of sort of golden nuggets that you have found really useful for getting your students to understand, drop the facade, let's figure out how you compose an effective application story and so on, but let's get you back to being in your own skin and being real.
Yeah, there really is. And it's true for my students, and it's also true for all humanity. And that truth is to be forward-looking and to be unabashedly forward-looking. So it's not a matter of who I was in my past or what I have achieved. It's about who I am now and what I will achieve. And would you like to take the ride with me?
Mm. What's an example of some of a story that someone shared recently?
Pardon me?
Do you have a story of a before and after reshaping a story of one of the folks you've worked with recently?
Oh, so many, so many. So, you know, you've got a student who, you know, says, I'm concerned about my candidacy for medical or dental school or law school or MBA school because I really haven't had time, you know, since I'm going to class and I'm studying OCHEM and so on and so forth, I really haven't had time to cure cancer yet, so what do I do? What do I say? And, you know, in all seriousness, my question is, well, would you like one day to be able to cure cancer? Is that something that you have in mind? And if that's really some of their real, true interests, then that's where I go with it first, is to have them boldly and strongly declare, Jim Collins calls this a big, hairy, audacious goal or a BHAG, strongly declare this life goal, this you know, set of accomplishments or achievements for their entire professional career. Through my career, one of my main achievements will be that I will dramatically come closer to curing cancer among humankind.
Mm.
That's a pretty good goal to speak to. And I don't know about you, but if somebody came to me and said, hey, you know what, I'm on this track to curing cancer, you want to play, you want to help out, I'm very inclined to say not only yes, but hell yes. How do I participate? How do I do it? Now, college students are a little bit more skeptical, and they're a little bit more, let's just say, jaundiced about this stuff. And so the first thing that they're going to say is, well, wait a minute, I can't say that in an application or an interview because people will think that I'm naive and unrealistic, and, you know, it's just not possible to do all these things. So I say, well, after you make your big declaration, you can always temper it later in your essay or in your conversation by saying, I recognize that I'm not going to be able to cure cancer by myself, and I recognize that I may not succeed in absolutely curing cancer in my career, but I'm going to try. That's a very compelling statement.
It's very compelling, and, you know, when I'm doing work with my entrepreneurs, my business leaders, part of what I share with them is you've got to create a compelling vision that you believe in that makes you want to get out of bed on a Tuesday with enthusiasm to go spend your weekday daylight hours when it's all of your time, your intelligence, your energy, your resources in play doing something that actually feels fabulous and compels you and that you want to participate in. And it's really, I'll be honest, it's illuminating for me to think about the essays I probably turned in over time. We're always looking in reverse. They were looking in the mirror trying to prove this is who I've been and where I've been, and not right. in that arena painting the forward-looking vision. And as you were describing it, I can imagine the people who are reading these essays creating two piles really rapidly. This essay touched me, made me want to keep reading, made me want to help this person move forward. And these are checklists. Yeah, they did that, they did that, they did that, they did that, they did that. Very different yeah. energy. So,
right. And I think it's true not just for college students applying to graduate school. I think it's true for all of us. And as you pointed out, you know, this is very, very helpful in the whole, like, I have to get up, you know, it's Monday morning and it's 6:30 and it's time to get out of bed. This is a very, very helpful thing to remind myself about, recognize that I do have a purpose, that the purpose is, in fact, self-selected. I chose it because I'm passionate about it, and it helps me, you know, get my blood flowing and get my heart stirring, and it gets me talking more rapidly. I get more excited about it, and before you know it, I'm up out of bed, dressed and ready to go.
That's right. And the same thing holds inside organizations, which is you've got teams of people that we want them feeling as enthusiastic about getting out of bed to use their intelligence and expertise and experience to come shape their day on behalf of what's going on in the organization. And so inside an organization, we want to be indeed sharing that vision to create everyone feeling in relationship with the vision and so on.
And this is the core of tribal leadership, of stage four tribal leaders, who are around championing the vision of their tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
mm-hmm.
not my vision anymore. It's our vision, and that step is a significant step. If you're going to actually go and declare that we have a vision, then you better ask the people what their vision is and get them to participate and get them to collaborate. Otherwise, it's just another plaque on the wall.
Exactly. Greg, I'd love you to come in and join us on this very element, because when we look at Club Tukey and the other online businesses that you've been shaping, very much it's about creating compelling visions. And who were behind the compelling visions of these new businesses that you have underway?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, let me comment on this. You know, Don said a couple of times that it works for everybody. And really, you know, everything that you're talking about, and even the Mary that was kind of mentioning what she does, ties in two ways. One, it's like marketing communication skills. It's like when you're able to, you know, articulate a clear, concise, powerful, and passionate vision of whatever it is you want to accomplish, it moves people. People act. People follow. People support. People join in. And that's what it's all about, clear, concise, powerful, and passionate, you know, language. And again, on the Angel Network side, it's about my business. It's about raising capital. It's the language of money. And on obviously what Don's doing with the schools, it's the entrance, you know, getting all that kind of stuff. And what Mary's doing with the local businesses is getting them to articulate what they're doing in a better way and communicate. And then as humans, it's our relationships. It's our with our kids. It's really all about, you know, people having the desire to really key in on their language skills. And to me, I've dedicated myself for decades of doing that. And then it's about having the self-image, which one of my companies is called Be Your Own You, and it's a self-image, self-esteem company, because that's what he's talking about. It's like helping people to believe in themselves and to love themselves and understand that they can accomplish anything. Matter of fact, today I started off watching a video that just blew me away, and it was just like, I love these videos on YouTube where people are accomplishing things that are just the odds are against them, a million to one. You go, man, if that guy can do it, what's my excuse?
so true.
You know, this guy was like, he was a war veteran. His back was bad. His knees were bad. He had two knee braces. He had a back brace, and he had two arm crutches. And he was 120 or 100 pounds overweight. And they said he'd never walk right again. And anyway, through inspiration and motivation of a yoga teacher, he lost his 100 pounds and now runs around, you know, his city like he's the little marathon runner. It was amazing.
Yeah.
and so for me, and again, I think there's always these things. Not always, but like for me and a lot of people, there's things that happen in your life that motivate you, inspire you to say, God, I need to do something about this. And then it's about the faith, and it's about the trust, and just, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm just going to take one step forward at a time. I'm going to go forward. And like with me, with Club Tukey, And the story behind that real quick is my daughter typed her name Candace into a search engine and got to a porn site. Mm. And she's like sitting right next to my wife. Mommy, why are these girls doing that? Why are they doing this? It's disgusting, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
and for my daughter, it wasn't quite as traumatic, but I've been in the business now long enough protecting and educating kids on the Internet that I've heard hundreds of cases where it's very traumatic experience for a child to come across something like that.
I can imagine.
And so from that point, I said, well, I got to get something to protect my child. And I looked out there, and what I found was inadequate. And I, you know, asked my brother, can you create something for me? He creates something for me. And we end up inventing the world's first cartoon interface kid-safe browser. And that's where it all started. And then the passion of, wow, you know, the predators online, the self-esteem, the issues, the bullying, all these different issues of this new paradigm of the Internet and how we have to deal with this. And then most parents don't have a clue of how to deal with it. They don't know what phishing is. They don't really have any idea of how to set up Facebook with the proper controls. It just overcame me, and I started a company, and you know, there I am. You know, 10 years later, still one of the top child advocates in the country to protect our kids on the Internet. And everyone, and this is kind of sad, but it's for the last 10 years. 10 years ago, they go, "Oh, your timing's great, Greg. I just read in the paper this, and I just read in the paper that. I just saw in the news this." And 10 years later, I hear the same thing weekly. Oh,
uh-huh.
Your timing couldn't be better. I just read this guy, and I just read this bullying thing. I just read this thing. And it's like, it's not getting any better. It is what it is, and parents need to step up and you know, do something to protect their kids on the Internet.
Yeah. If anything, I think this combination of the offline world and the online world is that the online world is providing more options for people who go out seeking.
Correct.
So if somebody goes online and says how to handle bullying, there's lots of resources, whereas before online existed, you had maybe your pediatrician, maybe your priest or rabbi, maybe another parent in the neighborhood who you could turn to and say, have you ever had to deal with bullying? So the sheer expansion of what's available to people is what's changed through the Internet.
No, the resources are just enormous, but it goes back to kind of what you're all about, what this radio show is all about. It goes back to the trusted sources, because not only is there just gobs of information, but now there's gobs of inaccurate information, everything from political to financial to everything. You know, and who do you trust? And so that's where this whole social media and social networking and your trusted relationships that you earn. It's not like this is just given to anybody. It's like it's earned over time. And I have that one saying, you know, you can earn, it takes years to earn my trust, but only seconds to lose it.
Right, right.
It's really kind of where this whole idea of us collaborating with one another and helping one another, and the term cooperative capitalism, with the understanding that, hey, capitalism, in my opinion, is the best, you know, economic system on planet Earth. But the cooperative capitalism even trumps that, going, hey, there's enough kids out there. Or Don and I could work together. He's doing stuff with kids. I'm doing stuff with kids. And Mary and I can work together. And you and I can work together, because there's plenty of people out there. And as long as we take the time to do our due diligence, understand who we're dealing with, and we can share that trust and leverage each other's trust, and we honor our commitments and the integrity of what we're doing, we can make the world a better place.
So true. So, Mary, you've got the challenge of both building trust with your clients and students and teaching them, in turn, how to turn around and build trust as well.
Yeah. You know, I'm listening to all of this, and it's so great to hear it. And, Linda, it's so great that you guys are doing this, because at least I feel that it gives, you know, your listeners a starting point. And it's just a start, because what if studies have shown and said that it takes 7 touches of a person before you can even get them to do business with you, whether that's an email, whether that's them coming, you know, somebody tell a referral, somebody telling them about you, or whatever. It takes 7 touches to get that person to do business. So I think it's very, very important, however you structure your business or however you touch the consumer out there, to really make it right. And when I say make it right, just look at your marketing, look at what it is you want to do. And I've heard this, too, a little while ago. It's about communication. It's about getting your message out. And it's about really making sure that the things that you are doing is on the up and up, and that you're just really trying to put out the best as well. As I listen to this, I remember during this past election, somebody says, "Oh, we're not going to worry about the fact checkers. We're gonna just make up our own stuff."
Yeah.
There's so many people out there that's making up stuff, putting junk on the internet, where kids type in and click, and porn is out there. I just think that this is just a very, very valuable, very, very, very valuable conversation. So do your due diligence. Do your homework. It's not that far away to get to the right people. And you're on this call right now, and you get four great people on this call right now, very ethical people, people who got their I's and crossed their T's. This is a great place to start, but make sure you do your due diligence.
You know, back in 2007, when I put out my first electronic newsletter, it was completely foreign. I was doing it to a business community here in Los Angeles that was pretty diverse, and it was strange and unusual, and in fact, still in 2007, not everyone had an email address. I actually discontinued my newsletter as I became the victim of 300 people with their newsletters just automatically sending it out. Mine was all done by permission, but I started to realize that it didn't feel like relationship anymore. The newsletter went from feeling very personal and very useful and helpful to just feeling like everybody is using this cookie cutter automated approach of being in front of me, which is not about relationship. So there's stuff that in a mere 3 to 5 years has really changed in this world of crafting relationship. And I suspect that the four of us actually have different rhythms. So, Dawn, in your world, the rhythm is probably pretty much the same. While an application to grad school is now being delivered electronically, the pace and the, what's the word I'm looking for? There's kind of berms or speed bumps, that pace, what's coming in to the person on the other end. They're not just randomly being emailed by every student that wants into a particular program.
No, they're not. And, you know, the institutions have done a very good job at administering this in order to prevent that exact problem. My clients are experiencing an ever faster influx of information because of the advent of the internet, and now they are, you know, inundated with all kinds of content. This is why you see YouTube videos of frustrated professors grabbing, you know, various electronic devices and throwing them across the room while other students are videotaping them and then posting it on YouTube.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a cultural conflict inside the classroom around what is appropriate use of technology, and that will probably never get completely resolved.
Right, right. And the sheer pace and speed of communication is creating a sense of distance rather than a sense of relationship.
It's hard for you to be a college student, fully engaged and have a great relationship with your professor while your laptop is open, you're tweeting, you're also watching your instant message, checking your email, and surfing various websites.
Mm-hmm.
That's a difficult
mm-hmm.
prospect to manage.
Yeah, yeah. And Greg, in your arena, and I'm speaking to you as the multipreneur who's operating in many arenas simultaneously, what are you seeing that used to be effective, that's not as effective now, that's creating distance instead of relationship and vice versa?
Oh, man, where do we start? You know, it's just there's so much. It's just information overload. There's just so much competing for your eyeballs and the stimulus and like Don just said, you know, for the first time ever, I literally woke up and grabbed my phone, turned it on, and looked at my Facebook while still in bed this morning. So
I thought to myself,
you know, I read the stats, and even in some of the training I do, I quote the stats of how many people look at their Facebook in bed. And the reason I did is I turned my phone on and it was blowing up because today's my birthday, you know, and everyone does your
Happy
Facebook
birthday.
Thing on your birthday. Thank you. But everyone's like, ching, 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 you know, like my phone's going off. I'm like, why is my phone going off? But, you know, you just think about that. And so it's like it really goes back to, I think here's like the best thing I can share. One is it's transparency. And you kind of alluded to it earlier. It's like really being transparent, really being authentic. That's where we're at. And there's another friend of mine who wrote a book called The Pendulum Effect, Michael Drew. And he's talking about how for centuries we
yes.
go through cycles of I and we, and we're now moving into a we cycle. And we're coming out of an I cycle. And the we cycle, there's a whole bunch to it. But the bottom line is that it's really about loving and caring in the we society and working with one another and collaborative and being real transparent, and people really respond to the transparency and to the authentics of who you are and what you've gone through and what you've accomplished or what you have. What on the flip side of that, what the war stories you've gone through.
And I'm now stuck with the image of you lying in bed checking your cell phone, because I confess, of course, I do the same thing. Or if I wake up in the middle of the night, I'll glance over and I'll go, did I get texted? Now, I'm somebody who is not a texter. I do not give people my number. I tell them, if they say I'll send you a text, I say, no, don't, because I don't want 27 different pathways of people communicating with me. It makes it, the onus is on me to constantly be looking at every source to see what messages are coming in. So I tell everybody very specifically how to communicate with me best. And what you were just talking about here it is your birthday and the phone is firing and the signals are coming. And I remember very distinctly the first year when on Facebook I was suddenly getting birthday wishes from people I actually didn't really know. I might have met them once at a networking function, and somehow on their side they put me in their system, or they put me in Plaxo, or they put me in LinkedIn, and so on, to be connected. But suddenly I was getting birthday wishes from people, and it was a very surreal thing. I can't be the only person who's had that kind of reaction.
Right, right.
I love getting, birthday welcome messages from bots.
Yes.
It's very confirming that I live in a modern society, modern age.
Yep. Now, Mary is living in a very different arena because of, Mary, the folks that you're working with, in fact, they do want the coupon on their birthday. They do want what is any and every possible special occasion to be communicated from a vendor or a supplier and so on. So it's a very different relationship in your arena.
Absolutely. And Linda, this is what I want to say to you, and happy birthday, by the way. It's nice to get those Facebook birthday wishes. I know the first time that happened to me, I was like, oh, somebody's really thinking about me. So it really made me feel good. I mean, I'm one of those persons that, give a lot of love and want a lot of love back. So what can I say? Linda, as far as the text messages for you, and you tell people specifically how to communicate with you, I applaud you for that. But I remember when they first started the ATMs, where you had your credit card and you go to Kroger or Publix or whatever. I'm on the East Coast, so it's Publix and Kroger and all that. And I said, I will never, ever, ever use my ATM card or my credit card to buy food with. No way. I would never, you're not going to make me conform. That's all I use now, okay?
Uh-huh.
I don't even carry money with me. So that will change, dear. It's going to be slow for you to be conforming to that, but it would change. But now, my clients and what I teach, is customers love getting text messages from Cold Stone Creamery, but at 5% ice cream cone, I'm a Dick's Athletic fanatic junkie. I love my sportswear. So if I get $10 off, man, I'm going there, because if I spend 20 and get 10 or spend 30 and get 10, I'm going, okay? So customers love the deals, and they're just conditioned for deals. I do not go into a store without a coupon, and I can tell you I've saved hundreds of thousands of dollars this way, without a coupon or some type of deal that I'm going to save some money. And there are millions of people out there like me. You've seen the woman who go into Kroger or Publix to shop, and she has all these coupons. I mean, it takes some time for this type of thing, but she has all these coupons, and she buys $400 or $500 worth of food, and she winds up spending $27.89. I mean, that could mean huge budget savings for a family of four. So this is the type of thinking and thought process that my clients are going after. These are the type of businesses that they're targeting, and this is what we're teaching businesses on, really, how to communicate with their customers. So it's a whole strategy. It's not just 1, 2, 3, throw a text message. I mean, you have to have some consistency about it. So I'm really into it, and I'm into it heavy, and this will probably be the thing that they check me out on that pine box. I don't know that I want that stone to stay yet, but it's going to have to do something with text message marketing.
It's true. And yet, in each of these arenas that we've been talking about, it comes back to that idea of message-to-market match. In the market that you're working in, Mary, it is an absolute match between a vendor and a customer to be delivering information with a certain frequency. It feels like a great relationship with them, whereas in my arena, I have certain people who decided they're launching a program, and I am getting, because they're relying on technology to be creating the relationship, and something goes awry in their autoresponder system, and I get 17 messages in a day, 4 days in a row, and a couple of times I'm getting in touch with their folks saying, you know, there's something wrong with your system, and at a certain point, if it's not getting fixed, I'm closing the relationship.
Yeah, I can relate to that, and that has happened to me as well. So I definitely can relate to that, and that is a different type of messaging, especially when I'm saying, hey, give me a coupon. I want a coupon. I want to keep my text messages or my iPhone filled with coupons, so when I go to stores, I can go ahead and get that deal, other than somebody just texting. You know what? To be perfectly honest with you, as it relates to emailing and all that kind of stuff, I have very specific things that I look at. I mean, I'm laser focused now. Because other than that, it can eat up and burn up a lot of your time. So definitely I can relate to where you're coming from with that. Mine is more business to consumer or consultant, you know, where I am the person who is helping a consultant get to the next level of their business. So I understand.
Yeah, and you know, we're kind of on a topic here of what volume of connecting and what pace of connecting and what style of connecting is relevant in each arena. And we each have to take the time to be cognizant of who's on the other end of the relationship and what their desires and expectations are. So, Dawn, in your arena, you actually have multiple relationships, because on the one hand, you have your students who you're helping and you're teaching how they're to proceed, but you yourself are building strategic alliances that are helping you build your business.
All the time, yeah. And it's a necessary part of being in a modern world. Well, I'm specifically looking for inspired entrepreneurs, small business owners, and either competing or complementary businesses who also have an aligned mission with my own, and that is to uplift the value, uplift the capability, and truly serve college students in helping them make the transition to becoming leaders in their lives. Finding those people is easier than you might guess, because those people speak a specific language, and finding that language becomes relatively easy with technology tools like Google and other search engines. So that's what I'm doing on a regular basis. In fact, literally every day I'm out there seeking and reaching out to other business owners via email, inviting them in to a larger tribe of tribal leaders.
Right. And if I remember from a couple of weeks ago, you are actually now becoming a guest blogger on a couple of extremely relevant sites.
Yeah, I am, exactly. So, I mean, there's a bunch of them that I'm a guest blogger on, and also invite others to be a guest blogger on my site in order that we all can better serve students. You know, these are not my customers. They're not your customers. These are human beings. They are their own customers. They're very, very good at discerning what it is that they're after. I'm just very lucky and very fortunate to be able to have a conversation with them at all.
Right. So your business model is to have a system of cultivating relationships that are helping you extend the number of people that you're able to be in front of and to serve and so on, as well as the people you're serving through your courses and programs and so on.
It's the highest good. If I can find a way of connecting someone with great innovation with my audience, I serve my audience best, independent of everything else.
And Greg, you've got your, I was going to say feet in multiple ponds, but with only 2 feet, that kind of gets complicated. So you're playing in lots of different arenas. What's changing for you in cultivating relationships and maintaining relationships in those various arenas?
Oh, it's kind of like a rating system. See, I'm one of these. I publicly speak, so I speak to thousands of people, you know. And so, you know, even though I don't think of myself as one of those respected gurus, when I'm on stage, I become one, you know, by virtue of the fact that I'm on that stage. And so, because of my personality, it's like I just cannot communicate and keep up with everybody that I can. So, really, it goes back to leveraging team, and really just, you know, you only have so much time in the day. And what's important to my mission and what's important to my purpose on life, and trying to do, using technology. I have this, one of my other software companies called BizPad, and it's a task management software management program, and I utilize it to remind me to keep in touch with the people I need to keep in touch with, in addition to managing all my projects and all my tasks. But for me, I actually, you know, have a system now where when I go to events, like I just came back from these two events, and I literally have probably 70 business cards. And there's just no way for me to follow up and keep in contact with 70 people. And so as I meet the people, I actually write a 1A, 2A, or 3As on them. And I have my own little rating system. And depending on, you know, what value I can provide for them or how we might build a joint venture or work together, I'll rate them. So when they come back, my team knows how to sort and sift and put them in a different system that communicates with people. But really, I think that's the hardest part, is with a personality like mine, I want to talk and help everybody. And so my biggest challenge is, you know, what do I say no to?
Right. And I love that you brought the notion of team into this, because as businesses grow and succeed, success breeds the next challenge. So for you, the challenge is how to craft the right levels of relationship when you cannot do it all yourself. So having a team and setting the expectations with those people who you've met about who will they be in relationship with is really vital.
Absolutely. No, it's crucial. And again, as a CEO and owner of 5 different companies, it's all about team. You know, that's what I do, is I manage people.
Right.
That's my job as a CEO. And as leaders, I hire people and manage people, and I'm looking for people. So,
right. Well, in the next few minutes, I would love to get the best thinking of when we think about folks who are entrepreneurs out there now. You know, whether it's newbies or it's people who it's time for them to refresh how they're thinking about going about using the power of relationships in building businesses. If there's any key teachings, whether they're ones that you share from the stage or share in your own programs, I would love to be able to share them with our audience. So, Dawn, you know, when you think about what's been evolving for you in the past few months and what seems to be very effective now, what's on the table?
You know, I look specifically for language, and I look specifically for people who are inspired in their language. So, very briefly, here's the takeaway. Everybody knows what it sounds like when someone, their language speaks around everything sucks. My life sucks. Everything sucks. Just horrible. And that's a very specific kind of conversation. And we've all heard that conversation. You can also hear it when somebody says, you know what, my life is great, we're great, but also you're great, and what you're doing is great. Now, that is the kind of dynamism, that's the kind of energy that I seek out on an everyday basis in order to find alliances.
Yeah, thank you for bringing us back again to this notion of energy and language and vision and forward focus. I know it's making this conversation, a really rich one that I know I'm going to be constantly referring to, both in my own settings, but with people that I'm working with. So I just love how you've packaged that together as an emphasis for people. You know, in my working world, I work with both people who are clearly introverts, who do their best focusing by themselves, get their energy, restore themselves being by themselves, and then at times they feel like it's a challenge to turn around and go out in the world. And yet, if we can help folks understand that, make your message not about what's been in the past, but what's in the future and the vision you're holding and what's energizing you, even the introvert is going to have an easy time connecting with people, talking about what they're feeling passionate about and connecting with others.
Hey, Linda, I wanted to say something.
Please.
It was really piggybacking off of what Greg had said a little while ago when he was talking about coming back from a event and having 70 business cards and, you know, having systems to deal with those business cards. I just left an event where Gina and I were here in Tampa, Florida. And I made up my mind before I left, always try to either figure out, well, what's the one takeaway that I'm going to come back and try to implement, and don't inundate myself with so much information and information overload. Just get that one takeaway. What was my goal when I was there? So I decided that I have so much on my plate right now. I got so much to do. I got so many things to implement. I said, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to connect all my friends and a lot of the people that I know with people that they can use in their business to deepen my relationship. So it was this one particular person there that I really wanted to get a deep relationship with. And I really wanted this person to work with me. I mean, I'm mastermind with this person. You know, I've seen this person around, we've done a couple of things, but I needed to get to know them a little bit more. So what I did was I just brought everybody that I knew to him and some others, like Gina, and I also connected him and Gina together that they can do business together with. And he told me after sitting down with Gina, it's like, Mary, you brought me a home run, and I'm going to give you my services. Well, that was exactly what I was looking for.
I love it.
Because he's so expensive. I mean, he's in a $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 range, you know, price range, and some of his stuff I just cannot afford. But I know that all of the top companies use him, and he is the best. He is the creme, whatever you say that word. He's the best in his business, okay? So I needed this guy, and I needed him to help me. And he was like, okay, after that, you know, depending on really how this goes, you know, you're going to get a lot out of this. So that was really what I dug into to really help me with automation, with just whether it's copywriting, whatever I'm trying to accomplish. I just pick those little things and say, okay, where am I weak at? What do I need? And that's what I use that for. So I collected a lot of business cards, but I focused on that one person, and I felt like I was following around like a little puppy. But you know, someone told me, Mary, you don't need to do that. You're okay in your own right. But that really helped me deepen that relationship. So sometimes it's just focusing on that one thing. Don't try to do everything. Nobody in the world can do it all. I mean, you have to automate your business. You have to automate the things that you're doing on a day-to-day basis. So you really, really need to focus on really getting some help and making those things happen.
I love it. Thank you. And Greg, you touched on the tools that you use, and I think that's so valuable because being in relationship has so many facets nowadays. It's like, how do we, in fact, systematize and allow ourselves then to have very real conversations with people?
Well, my best piece of advice that I can share with people, and I love sharing it with kids in particular, there's this concept called the compound effect. And small things done consistently over long periods of time compound themselves and guarantee success. I don't care if it's in your relationships. I don't care if it's in your health, losing weight, getting in shape, whatever that is, in your business. But whether it's PR marketing, going, I'm going to put out 3 press releases. No, put out 52 press releases and see how the compound effect takes in action. Don't write articles, you know, or like Don was saying, guest blogging. If he guest blogs for a month, that's okay, that's cool. But if he guest blogs for a year, the compound effect takes over and it multiplies everything. So it really, it's like if everyone could just remember that and say that something every day, small things done consistently over a long period of time will compound themselves and guarantee success. That's the world's best advice. And then it's about sort and sift. You know, what are you saying no to? Because you can't do everything.
Thank you all so much for this fabulous conversation. I'm going to be adding in the show notes the various resources that we've talked about so our listeners can go get those books for themselves. And I thank the three of you for creating a really rich conversation today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Have a fantastic day, everybody.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Greg.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Come back next week for Relationship Marketing 101. Join us at Directions University, www.directionsu.com, for passion-powered results.